All right, so let's go ahead and get started. Our agenda is here. Today on the agenda is a review of the JSON-LD 1.0 doc syntax and API to make sure that we're ready to go into candidate rec, and then a decision to go to candidate rec at the end of the agenda. We have a few additions to the agenda. The first addition is David Booth's comment. He has an editorial change that he'd like to see put into the CR spec. The next change, or the next thing that we might want to discuss, is some of the news that's floating around about JSON-LD, and then an update from Vikash, and then we can get into the review. So let's see. Scribe Nicholas is not here. Greg, would you mind scribing today, please?
Sure.
Thanks. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with the JSON-LD news really quickly, because that should go fast. JSON-LD. Okay, so the JSON-LD got a fairly decent coverage at the social networking event. Sorry, Greg, I forgot the name of it again. What was the
Social Standards Workshop.
Social Standards Workshop. So there were some announcements from IBM about the Activity Streams 2.0 work that we knew about. And I think schema.org, there was some news about schema.org actions. And if you look on schema.org, and specifically the actions link on schema.org, you will see that they're now using, let me get a link to that. And do you have a link to the workshop, Greg, somewhere?
Oh, yeah, hold on.
Greg, is that the link that David put up?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Thank
Okay,
you.
great, 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 great. So lots of talk about JSON-LD there. Schema.org announced some action stuff, marking up actions, and they're using JSON-LD specifically because they found that people were having problems marking it up in RDFA and microdata. And that has to do with the complexity of the relationships. It was hard to express that in HTML, but fairly easy to express that in JSON-LD. And as a result, and the Activity Streams folks started talking about JSON-LD quite a bit. And then as a result of that, the microdata, or sorry, the microformats folks started being fairly snarky on Twitter and other social media streams, which led to this article claiming that JSON-LD is an unnecessary, unneeded specification, which really was the person that wrote that, Shane Becker, didn't really read the spec at all. He just looked at the landing page and came to his own set of conclusions and kind of went off on JSON-LD, and that started getting picked up and reblogged and retransmitted by the microformats folks, who were saying that it was a really well-written article, which it was not. And so I wrote a piece to debunk a lot of the stuff that was written in that article. So that, coupled with Adi Oshanai, of Google, started talking about JSON-LD as well, and there's a nice thread there where people are going back and forth. So some people are defending JSON-LD. Ian Hixon jumped in and said the main problem with JSON-LD is that it's based on RDF, which is a trivial solution to a non-problem. So we're still having that conversation, that discussion with the WG people. Anyway, so those are all the news items that happened over the last week. There's a lot of
I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify that. So Ade's piece was complaining that it was a problem,
Ade
or he was
linked.
he
Ade
linked,
linked.
okay.
Yeah, Ade linked to the article by Shane Becker saying that JSON-LD is unnecessary. And I responded to Shane Becker's post and pointed Ade at it. So yeah. So anyway, there's a nice, I mean, conversation's good. where, you know, a conversation allows us to kind of talk about the reasons JSON-LD exists and all that kind of stuff. So this was an opportunity to talk about some of the more kind of esoteric things in JSON-LD, like why we designed it the way we did and why the specification exists in the first place and why microformats isn't a good solution or doesn't address the same set of use cases. It's important to have those kinds of discussions in public.
The whole activity stuff that Google came about with was actually not well received there at all. It came across as that they were basically ignoring the activity streams community to the point where the guy making the presentation, Alex, I think his name was, actually went back, talked to Guha. So Guha came up for the second day to defend schema.org and sort of try to dispel some myths, and I'm afraid was not very effective at that. I think off the record, Dan Brickley is really a much better person to act as sort of an ombudsman than Guha, I think. But anyway, I don't think that schema.org came out of that smelling particularly good. Not that they really care, but they basically discounted the whole activity streams as being, you know, having shown very little uptake and not really mattering for what schema.org was doing, which is pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, well, it's good that you said that, because that might mean that, I don't know, we need to distance ourselves a bit from schema. It's hard to, because, you know, they have a huge user base, and it's very difficult to ignore them. But at the same time, we saw this happen before with RDFA and a lot of that stuff, and the other vocabularies that were out there. If anyone has any comments on the best way to, I mean, I think our general strategy has been to just talk about JSON-LD used anywhere, because it's good press for us. And I don't think saying that, as long as we say, hey, you know what, they're using the data format, isn't that great, instead of, hey, you know what, this is a really great initiative. Because, you know, if we go and we you know, say that schema.org is really great and people need to back it, or Activity Streams is really great and people need to back it, you know, we don't want to pick sides. And in fact, JSON-LD doesn't. That's not the purpose of the markup protocol. It's supposed to help people achieve their technical goals. And for both schema.org and Activity Streams, it works really well.
One of my responses on Twitter, someone, I think one of the Activity Streams people was, or microformats people was, in a response to, you know, what it does with vocabularies, I cast JSON-LD as being vocabulary agnostic, and that's certainly not something that, I mean, microformats, you cannot, the format and the vocabulary are inseparable.
And they're making some changes to that in microformats too, but then again, you know, it's a community around microformats. Seems to be, it's almost non-existent these days. It's very, very small. There's no activity on the mailing list. The wikis are mostly overrun by spammers and undoing spammer comments. Versus, you know, at least the JSON-LD communities, we're seeing new adoption. We're seeing, you know, new really neat applications being used there, so same kind of thing around the microdata community. I mean, there isn't a lot of active community involvement there that I can see.
There is also a fair amount of presence by the sort of the indie web community, with Tontek being the main person there, and they actually showed some really cool social technology, including their own IndieAuth, which is yet another sort of authentication web blog as identity vehicle, but many other things as well. So I think that it really was an effective way to bring many different communities together, and I think it really was a great forum for JSON-LD. I don't think there's anything we need to do, and I wouldn't particularly worry about any of the schema.org stuff that came up there, because I don't, they're such a big player that, of course, you're going to take shots at them.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Okay. Anything else from the news perspective for JSON-LD before we move on?
Not from me.
Okay. David Booth's editorial comments are up next. David had sent out a minor change to the syntax spec. In this email here, I linked to it in the IRC channel. David, do you mind doing a quick overview of the change?
Sure. Yeah, it's just editorial. It's just to smooth out some of the language there. Which I think got probably a little glitchy due to some previous edits, I'm guessing. But anyway, mm-hmm. The text says the JSON-LD serializes a generalized RDF dataset, but by default, it's actually a standard RDF dataset.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that it starts to talk about the extensions before actually mentioning that there are extensions.
Mm-hmm.
So I just suggested adding a little bit of wording to clarify that. It's down near the bottom of that message.
Mm-hmm. And Greg and I have already reviewed the text and think it's perfectly fine. We can just integrate that into the spec, unless there are any objections.
Is it really true that JSON-LD by default serializes a standard data set? I mean, nothing prevents you from putting in there blank notes. Just if you convert it to RDF, they just get dropped, but they're still in there.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's why I say it standardizes a standard data set by default. If you flip the option, then it serializes a generalized RDF data set.
So I get might be a difference.
The way to judge it is,
okay, it might be a little understanding about what it's meant to serialize then. I mean, it's not syntactically invalid to use blank nodes in property positions as it is in turtle, say. However, so it can be serialized in a sense, but it does not result in those blank nodes being emitted when you turn it into RDF.
Right, and if the spec only constrains the end result, which a spec always does that, it never constrains how you do things, then the end result is just, the standard RDF, unless you flip that switch.
I can see interpreting it both ways. Really, I don't think this is going to make a big amount of difference, a great amount of difference, the editorial change here, which is why I'm fine with putting it in. But if, Marcus, you feel that it needs to be worded differently, we need some other spec text that we can put in there.
Well, I mean, this description is somehow inconsistent with the data model we describe in the spec. So in the data model, we clearly say that properties might be blank nodes, and this text suggests that that's not true. So
yeah, and I think the whole text here
is misleading.
Okay. Well, so I think the approach that David Booth's coming from is saying that the we're talking about the serialization at this point, and you're saying that we're talking about the data model at this point. So clearly we're going to have two different interpretations there. So the question is, what exactly are we talking about at this point? Are we talking about the serialization of the data model?
Well, but even in the serialization, the blank node identifiers are there. It's just
not by default.
The only place where they get dropped is if you change the serialization format to RDF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's not about JSON-LD, it's about RDF, if you want to separate them.
Yeah, he's saying when you serialize to JSON, it's all there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. So what is this paragraph talking about, the serialization to JSON or the serialization to the RDF data model? Or I guess the
It's kind of strange because it's not a serialization.
Yeah, it's the conversion. It's the transmogrification, whatever we want to call it, into the RDF data model.
Yeah, we're sort of using the wrong word when we talk about serializing and deserializing to an abstract syntax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any ideas to move us forward here? What I could do, David, is try to mess with.
Let's see. I'm just thinking. Maybe we can move the word optionally to just before the word serialize. Maybe that would help. I don't know.
Why don't I take a look at it later on today, David, and then ping both you and Marcus for the spec text I come up with and see if
that
works. Because I think we understand what the issue here is. It's just figuring out how to say it. But I think the core here is that we will try and change that spec text so that it addresses David Booth's issues and it addresses Marcus's concerns. Anything else on this before we move on? Next up is Vikash. Could we have an update on your progress for the Google Summer of Code stuff?
Hi, everyone. Hello?
Yep, hi. We hear you.
Hi.
Yeah, I shared my weekly update this week upon both the work that I've done so far. Marcus had pointed out a few issues in the schema. He said a lot of these are still not present, but I did clarify that depending upon the deadline issues, those were the three targets which have been met. Apart from that, he also mentioned that a few terms such as reviews are still there. So I don't know if yet those have to be added or not. If so, then I'll add all the fields which are not redundant and non-plural to the schema. Post that on the creator app, as noted, the live changes of the form in the output has been done. Now the context also points to the w3id.org/schema, so that once the that pull request is merged after the schema.org, everything will be done. So those were the initial targets which have been, in my opinion, have been met. If there are issues, I would really like to. Post that on the, so I'll get the finalization of the creator app and the schema. I have moved on to the LinkedIn application, which I also shared in the weekly update. Along with that, in the LinkedIn app, I have one question. So the question remains is, now when the LinkedIn gives me a JSON, so should I display the JSON and the JSON-LD both, or what should be in the output and how things should proceed? And what are the things which are still left, which still has to be done? Or this will be essentially the last coding task for the project, and then I can start with the documentations and implementing d3.js in Playground and making the Playground more useful.
Let me go back up and go from the top here. Regarding the JSON-LD schema context, Marcus said, you know, it's not complete, and we were wondering if you would add anything to that. And I think Marcus, you're missing a conversation that Vikash and I had about putting just having just a really basic document that he could use with the creator tool And then I think what we're going to have to do is replace that document eventually with something that's machine-generated, basically the thing that Sandro Hawk ended up creating. I mean, that should hopefully one of us will have the time to do that. It shouldn't be that difficult to write a bit of Python code that goes through the RDFA and or the schema and translates it. Greg, you said I think at some point that you had or had were working on a tool or thought that that would be a quick one-off script.
Well, no, I hadn't worked on one. It was Sandro did basically a first pass at it, in I don't know an hour, with some Python. I don't know what's happened with that. So I don't think it's particularly challenging because the basic information you need is in the RDF version of the schema.
Okay. So Vikash, maybe that would be one of the bonus projects that you work on. We might want to just take Sandro's context and drop it in there to see if it's. I haven't looked at it lately. I don't know if it's really that complete. But the idea is we'd make this context better over time, hopefully sooner than later. Okay, so that's the context thing.
So I have one question here. So so the Sandro schema which is there. So it should be, I should go through a Python crawler and then get it into the context, or it can be a handwritten one? Or should I write a crawler to get the details and then put it into the schema?
So doing this the right way would entail you fetching a document from schema.org, their vocabulary definition file, and you would use a program like Python to translate it into JSON context automatically. So you'd take the RDFA that they have and you'd translate it into a JSON context because they're going to be updating that context over time. And so having a manual process where we go in and make those changes is not a good long-term solution.
Okay, so that means the crawler has to be in a regular interval, and with time, it will progress and learn.
Well, I didn't quite catch it. Your audio is fairly difficult to understand, Vikash, probably because you're using a non-headset mic. Could you repeat that?
A crawler has to be, as you said, the context, the vocab file will be changing in schema.org. So essentially, I write a Python crawler which will crawl and get the data and form a JSON, form a context, and with time it will keep updating and changing itself. As changes are reflected in, in the schema. So should I start doing it right now, or I was thinking the pull request could be merged and created tool and the other thing can also be merged for the moment.
Don't worry about doing it right now. Don't work on that right now. Other people might work on it. You continue to do what you're doing, meaning work on the creator tool in the LinkedIn app, and then once you're done with that, we can come back around and try to address the schema.org context issue.
Sure, that would be great. And I think the creator tool is also now done. It's just from my end, I've put validations, also maybe changes of the form and all. If the community members can test it and choose.
Vikash, your audio is...
Otherwise, I think from my end...
Vikash, your audio is breaking up pretty badly. I kind of got what you said. You said you're going to continue to work on the creator tool in the LinkedIn app. I've got a couple of comments on that, so we'll get to that. The W3D, I'm going down from the top of your email. So we just talked about the JSON-LD schema context. So don't work on that anymore. We will try and figure out some short-term solution, and then long-term, maybe you can come back around and work on a Python crawler after you're done with all of your other tasks. The w3id.org redirection stuff is fine, more or less. We'll pull that in at some point. The JSON-LD creator tool, it's a good first pass. We've got people, places, and events. We need to make that tool more generalized so that other people can plug in different types of things into that tool. So right now you have people, places, and events, but we want to be able to do things like organizations and all of the other major schema types. And in order to do that, we can't hard code the forms and hard code the JSON-LD stuff into the tool. But the first pass was all that we asked for your GSOC project. So one of the things that you could do to improve the creator tool in the future is make it generic so that other people could easily extend the tool. So, for example, having a JSON-LD file that describes, you know, the JSON-LD that will be created along with the forms that should be displayed on the screen. We can go into that a little more detail in the future. Does that make sense, Vikash?
Yeah, it does make sense. It's very much clear that all the things are exactly in place. So for now, and in fact, for now, I think the creator, I just require the comment from the creator tool. Apart from that, it's very much clear that we can make it more generic and make it more extensible. Rather than hard coding, it should be auto-generated from code, and it should also, in fact, generate a file which is savable and of the proper JSON-LD output.
Right, exactly. And so those are all extensions that you can do in the future. Don't worry about working on them right now. But once you're done with your first set of tasks and you're done with the documentation, we can come back around to make those extensions on the tool. Is your LinkedIn application published anywhere yet?
Hello?
Vikash, is your LinkedIn application published anywhere yet?
No. So for LinkedIn application, I have a few questions.
Okay.
First being, I won't be able to publish it. So every time I so in the same pull request, I'll keep committing it. And if possible, I think you guys need to pull it down and then test it on the local machine, because it's being tested on a local host, so that won't be able to be deployed on the server. Otherwise, else I can do is I can additionally add a post it on Heroku or something.
Okay. Do you have a link to the repo
so you can
look at it?
A link to the.
Do you have a GitHub link to the LinkedIn application repository where you're working on this?
Just a second. I'll just see to it. If it's not committed, I'll commit it right away and then send the post to LinkedIn.
Okay.
Because there's a possibility that because I've just started with LinkedIn app, I've just made an initial commit where it just fetches the data and all.
Okay. Is there anything else that we need to cover with us?
What should be present in the LinkedIn application?
What the ideal tool would be that you would, with the LinkedIn application, someone would go to that tool, they would put in their LinkedIn URL or their profile name, the application would go out and fetch the JSON. Convert it to JSON-LD in the background and just give them the JSON-LD in a text box below somewhere on the page.
Yeah, so essentially what I was thinking is after the user clicks on the sign-in button, he'll see the fetch JSON and the JSON-LD so that he'll be able to make a connection between how the data is being transferred, how the context is working. Or if you want, I'll just show the JSON-LD and all the computations will be done in background.
Let's do all the computations in the background and just show the JSON-LD for now. We want to make the tool look kind of simple. what you could do is add an advanced tab or an advanced button that would show them the JSON that they got from LinkedIn. But by default, do not show the JSON that they got from LinkedIn. Hide that by default. And then you can have a little advanced tab or something that shows them how all the processing works behind the scenes if you want.
Isn't the idea for the JSON-LD to look just like the JSON you got, but you add a context key? Or is that not what's happening?
I don't know. We could talk about that. I was thinking that it would be translated to schema.org markup. The key thing here is that, you know, if you want to be able to export your LinkedIn data to something that's more readable from outside of LinkedIn in a way that people that understand schema.org would be able to look at it and understand how it maps, then you could we do that translation. So you would basically take the LinkedIn data, you'd have a context, you'd expand it, and then you'd compact it down to schema.org, the schema.org context. We could do it the
right.
other way.
Well, it might be good to see the JSON-LD just using the context for LinkedIn data so you can work with it that way, and also see the JSON-LD after you've converted it to schema.org.
Yeah, so I guess the question is, what's the purpose of this tool? My understanding of the purpose of this tool was that it would give people an easy way of just seeing their social network data as JSON-LD, not necessarily to educate them about how, you know, the translation happens.
Well, right, but if that's true, why wouldn't we want it to look as much like LinkedIn as possible? So it seems as...
Because the LinkedIn JSON is really confusing. The data that LinkedIn publishes is not very intuitive for people that have been working with JSON-LD and Scheme.org, and I think that's the primary use case here is Schema.org, not necessarily LinkedIn. I mean, and I'm not saying that's a strong argument. That's just my line of thinking.
Well, it seems like other people might want to reuse the context that's used in this tool to write their own tools to work with the LinkedIn API.
Sure, and
so
for that, we can have an advanced tab for those people.
Hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I think that's kind of a secondary application of this, and it's more developer-oriented, and so I think that belongs in an advanced tab versus something that people would just copy and paste in an HTML chunk and put on a page somewhere.
Right.
My guess, what I was hoping was that people would, well, there are two things. One of them is that people would just copy and paste the JSON-LD and dump it in a file called dave.jsonld on their website and just start publishing their social information in JSON-LD on the site just by publishing that file.
Well, or into a script tag on their profile, their HTML profile page.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so then does that mean that we're putting those extra features in an advanced tab? Like if they want to see what the LinkedIn JSON looks like or the LinkedIn context looks like, they can click on the advanced tab and see that information.
Yeah, so I think that would be a good way. So after the user logs in, he'll see the JSON-LD directly, and if he wants to see the JSON or the context, he can see in different tabs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Anyone else have comments on that? Would that be good enough for a first pass for Vikash?
That's great. Just a... sort of a meta comment, Vikash, it's your audio has always been very difficult to understand, and I suspect that it might be partly that you're not using a headphone or something to silence the audio, and there might also be some internet latency or bandwidth issues that are causing the sort of noise-canceling algorithms to mess things up. So If there's some way you can improve that in the future, it's going to make your interaction on these calls much easier for everyone else.
Yeah, certainly I keep that in mind. In fact, my data pack got finished, so as a result, I wasn't able to get connected from the last 2 weeks. So I think there's some serious issues with my internet in the current scenario.
Specifically, Vikash, I think the major issue is that you're not using a headset with the microphone integrated. If you did that, your audio would be much, much clearer.
Yeah, that's the main problem.
Yep. Okay, anything else before we move on? Okay, let's start talking about the JSON-LD CR docs. The review of JSON-LD 1.0 CR-ready spec. I prepped a candidate-ready spec last week for JSON-LD. It integrates everything except for David Booth's issues, and we need to upgrade or update the references that we use in the normative and informative references section. Other than that, I think the candidate rec spec is ready to go as far as the editorial stuff is concerned. Has anyone been able to, does anyone disagree that it's not ready to go? Any comments on the CR Ready spec?
My only comment would be that several people have complained about not quite understanding how type is being overloaded, and I don't know if that's lack of reading the spec or if we need some more editorial changes. So the main problem being people see type in at context and they're expecting that they can put the actual type of an object in there, versus this is the data type that is expected.
Yeah.
I think the problem there is that a lot of people don't read the specs, but just look at the examples.
It's a big, complicated spec, so I think that's the reality. People are going to gloss over it, and they're going to get through and think that they know enough to work with.
Is there some kind of larger warning or visual thing that we can do to catch people's eye when they're using type?
We maybe need a cookbook.
Yeah. There are a couple other things that we could do. One of them is to mark that feature as at risk and say that we might change it to data type after the CR period. So basically reintroduce, data type. Because I think the key, and the problem with that is that we could still use data type in there, and they would still think that they could mark, a person or a place or an event by putting.
Yeah, I don't think that would solve the problem.
Okay. Well, then the problem is a reading and a comprehension problem. We're pretty clear in the spec now. We could try and put a bit more. A larger warning around it, but I have a feeling that a lot of those people that are making those mistakes are not reading the spec at all, meaning that they don't understand that there's a difference between data types applied to, literals and the RDF type of an object. It's just a very it's a problem that I think we've all always kind of had. We had the same kind of issue with RDFA in the beginning. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I think that the problem is that the overloading of type isn't carried through because we treat the concept of data types as something different than RDF types. I wonder when you said to use at data type, was that to reintroduce the distinction, or is it to use something specific for this just in the context?
It was to revert the decision that we made to use the same keyword for two things. It would no longer be kind of contextual.
No.
But again, I think Dave's right, is that it wouldn't address the problem completely.
I, I think that it might address the problem unless people started to use type instead of data type, which it's hard to say. I think it's a coin toss. On the other hand, perhaps using the original coerce keyword in the context at least implies that people don't directly think about type, but think that, okay, something happens to values. I mean, because type in the context is only for the values of things. You could actually, well, one way to do it is to use at value instead of at type mm-hmm. in the context.
Mm-hmm. Or we allow at type to be used for nodes as well. That would be another option. So you could inject a class type or something like person.
Yes, that was in my mind a long time ago, because I think that there was something about an example with the Drupal usage, which seemed to indicate that they had coercion on person or something like that. What would that mean in terms of the algorithms? Would it work?
Round tripping it starts to become complicated, because then we start raising the question of whether or not that type's removed automatically if it exists in the context or if it remains. Right.
Yeah, well, I don't think we want to go down that road again right now.
Opening up a can of worms that I don't think we want
right.
to open at this point, especially
no.
since we don't know exactly why those people are making the mistakes that they are.
That's true. I agree, and also because that would mean that for types and types only, we could generate extra information for nodes. But perhaps using another keyword in the context, I would be fine with reintroducing coerce if that would send a message, or if that's unnecessary, perhaps just using at the value. I haven't even imagined how that would look, but do we have some good example?
The at values might be confusing.
Result in some other confusion.
Coerce is good as long as the reason that they're... So coerce might have the same problem in that they think that they're coercing the object that's associated with the term instead of coercing the data
value.
Yeah,
it's more like you need to say like expected value, or you need a different keyword. None of the ones that have been suggested.
I think
the keyword
is
I think the keyword should imply treat the string value given as something else than a string, right?
We could just make that the keyword.
Yeah, that would solve that would solve the problem.
Yeah.
It might introduce
interpret as.
Yeah, but I wonder if coerce doesn't coerce sort of imply primitives of some sort.
How about this? How about we put an issue marker beside this and say that we might introduce a new keyword after CR if implementation or if we get more comments in related to this? And we have gotten comments in on this.
Yeah.
Usually when we tell the people how it's used, they get it and they start using it like that. So I feel like once people learn it, they don't forget it. Like, it's not confusing after that point. But let's, instead of spending the telecon time trying to figure out what this word could be, which could take a very long time, let's just put in an issue marker and see if we can have this discussion over the next couple of weeks.
But should we sort of do a proposal to examine the possibility of another keyword? Because to record it in this telecon...
I can just put in an issue marker.
What problem are we trying to solve here? I think the issue is that people don't understand that in RDF typing of notes and literals is something different.
Yep.
And even if you have a different keyword, that distinction would still be there. So the confusion would just be somewhere else. and people would use the wrong keyword or something else. So I think all we need to do, and every time we told that to people, they understood it immediately and didn't have a problem to understand why it works that way. So I think that problem will resolve itself as soon as some tutorials or something are written, because people don't read the spec as detailed as they should in this regard, probably.
I agree with Marcus. I'm just worried about sort of trying to tweak one way or the other when I think the issue isn't the spec. It's the fundamental concepts that are in there that people will learn through examples. And it's also funny that people aren't, you know, they're just asking questions through emails or whatnot. They're actually not going to the playground, which would be a great way to resolve these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe that's just a matter of time, too.
I do still think that the use of type in context does introduce a threshold which will never go away for newcomers, and it will always be a bit of a hurdle to get over. I find it still sometimes a bit strange when I just glance at the data, because we have other specific keywords like container, which sort of sends a clear signal, but when I see at ID and at type together, you always have to wonder, is it a node or a part of the context? So I would be very much in favor of reintroducing queries, even if we hadn't had this issue, because it always rubbed me a bit the wrong way to see type used as the queries keyword.
Okay. All right. But so how about this?
I think something, what I was going to suggest that might be a very, very useful tool is we should probably try to add some kind of explain feature to the playground, so that when people are using it and they put their context in there, it could be some visual thing that goes line by line telling them what their context means and how it's being applied to transform the data. Because it might be that people actually are using the playground and they're seeing the output, but they have no idea. It's sort of a black box. I have no idea what happened. So maybe if we had like an explain feature in there, that would be useful.
Yep, totally agree.
Can you get on that, Dave?
Yeah, right away.
Okay, how about this for a proposal? Add an issue marker for type stating that we may introduce a new keyword to do literal type coercion. That at least makes it so that we could make this decision later on without having to go through another last call. Marcus, you're a minus
it won't address the issue, and it will just trigger another round of endless discussions, probably with a lot of people who barely read this back, and I think we have better things to do in the next phase. That tweet, for example.
Okay.
Yeah, Marcus actually does have a good point there, that we don't want to trigger a bunch of endless discussions over this. And that might be what happens here. I'm gonna change to a minus one on this, because I think we should let it go and see what people have to say. If it's really a problem, we can change it.
Okay, but remember that this doesn't cost us anything to do it now, but if we change our mind later on, it's going to cost us. We're going to have to go through last call again, and we're going to have to go through CR again. I guess we could skip CR. So it costs us, by not putting this in the spec, in the worst case, it costs us another 4 weeks. By putting this in the spec, it just costs us writing that, you know, two sentences into the spec.
But we are not changing any functionality. We're just adding another keyword which does the same as type now, so I don't see much point in adding another keyword which changes.
But this is just for the issue marker, so that we can do it if this would solve the confusion that has appeared.
Right.
I think an issue marker sort of it acknowledges that there can be some confusion and gives us some maneuvering room. So that's why I was sort of on the plus side. Perhaps there's some wording of it that is less, I don't know, that is less likely to lead to confusing discussions.
But even if we add an issue marker now, we would have to go back to last call, I think, because we didn't have that issue marker in last call, so it wouldn't change anything.
No, I don't think so. No. That's not how the W3C process works. It's just we don't. You're allowed to make changes after you're allowed to make substantive changes after you come out of candidate rec, as long as you noted that you may have made those changes. You might have to make those changes after the candidate rec phase. So that would not require us to go through another last call.
Why did we need another last call for the API?
I forget. We ended up changing a number of things that didn't have issue markers on them, right?
Yeah, but the same is the case here. So we are in LC now. We are entering PR, and we add another
issue marker
for a new feature.
We're not in LC anymore. So I'm being very, very pedantic and technical with the W3C process. We are no longer in LC. And the doc that we're preparing is to go into candidate rec. So this change is just adding an issue marker to the spec. I understand what you're saying. Logically, why in the world would you be able to add anything to the spec after LC before you go into candidate
rec? No, I'm saying the issue marker won't help us anything. We can put in the issue mark, yeah, that won't be a problem, but as soon as we make the decision to change that, we would need to go back to last call, as far as I understand it.
No, we wouldn't. We would just point to the issue marker and say, see, we foresaw this coming, and then that we would, you know, we'd make the change, make the addition, and continue on. The reason that they do that is so you don't end up in this constant cycle of going from CR back to LC to CR back to LC.
Then we could have done the same with the API when we changed
the
promises.
All right. I think none of that's here or there. Let's move on. If what Manu is saying is true, my vote is for least friction here. I want to move the thing forward. And obviously, if that generates discussion and that causes us to have to, my vote is for minimal problems. So that's what my vote is for.
Yeah. Okay. So we're still. It looks like we have. It's barely leaning towards the put the issue marker in, but I don't think we have enough to say that we have consensus on that. So we're not putting in an issue marker.
How do you interpret? So D. Longley's last vote was for a minus one. Is that? Do you have a different vote?
All right. Here's a plus one. We can get the issue marker in there. I'm assuming that Manu's description of the W3C process is accurate, and I don't want us to have to spend a whole lot of time doing this. So I'm willing to trigger a potential another bunch of discussions over this. We're still going to get the thing put through.
Yeah.
But we can still, if you are not correct on this, Manu, I expect at least Marcus and Dave to vote minus one on actually making the change, which would prevent us from going into a second last call if that would be required. So I think we're safe as long as we don't forget that we do not want that.
Yeah, and my assumption is we're not going to make any change at this point because we don't know why these people are making these problems, and to try and guess what's going through their mind is dangerous. So we would probably not change anything, but this just kind of tries and hedges a little bit. Okay, let's move on.
I have one more thing that people have brought up. Dan Brickley brought this up again. he was confused about whether or not when you specify type ID, he was confused as to whether or not you can you're expecting a URL or whether you can also expect an object or an array of objects, which you can. But there's a little bit of confusion over that as well, and I don't know if this is the exact same sort of issue. But we've got at least two of these types of things where it's a little bit confusing for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think there the confusion is a little bit different because it sort of implies that the typecasting might work on things other than just bare strings when it really is intended just to work on bare strings. So I don't see that as being sort of the same order of confusion. It is confusion, but doesn't lead to the gross misinterpretations that other people have had.
The same is true for ad language.
Mm-hmm. Can we think of any spec text that would resolve this confusion?
I think that we're at the point where adding things is the wrong thing to do.
Well, I think the spec text could be if a string is encountered in the value position, it will be interpreted according to the at type specified in the context definition for that term. Mm-hmm. Having that in there, so it's clear that it only applies to strings, or highlighting that fact might be helpful.
I think we have some text like that in the spec. Let me see if I can.
Yeah, I'm reading what's in the spec right now too to see if we have.
Well, I'm sure we say that it's used for interpreting strings. But I think that's sort of the point, is that there's enough stuff there that people miss it or they gloss over it. And that's why I think it's sort of a futile attempt to try to just add even more text to try to address things that people aren't seeing the first time around.
Well, I mean, if you look at the example 3, which a lot of people will just read the examples, it's misleading because it says at type at ID, this means that the value associated with the image should be interpreted as an identifier that is an IRI. And that's not strictly true. If a string is encountered as a value, then it should be interpreted as an IRI. So there's a subtle difference, and if people are just coming through looking at the examples, then that can be a source of confusion.
Yeah, the concern I had with, I had that in the spec text before, where I was very specific about, you know, it being a string, and it was quite a, it was a lot to swallow in the third example, right? Because we're being ultra, ultra specific there, and I think it's going to be difficult for people to kind of understand why we're being that specific, and in fact, they're probably going to, when they read it, they're not going to understand that all that specificity is required.
Well,
they're not going to get it.
I don't think we have to make a lot of substantial changes here. I think maybe just when we say, you know, when we're talking about how the values of certain properties can be interpreted as IRIs, we could just say if the values are strings of these properties, they can be interpreted as IRIs. If we just start throwing in, you know, if it's a string where we mention this stuff, that might be helpful because people will read that and think, oh, well, this thing's an object, so it doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm just wondering.
I think that's the only thing that we really need to do here. I think just some minor editorial changes where we just add, you know, if the value is a string, then it can be this.
Where?
Okay, so in the example, we can say that, and then there's a little... there's a little paragraph after the example talking about the context. After example 4, it says, the reference context not only specifies how terms map to IRIs in the schema.org vocabulary, but it also specifies that the values of homepage and image property can be interpreted as an IRI. Instead, we could say, you know, but it also specifies that string values for the homepage and image properties can be interpreted as IRIs. So it's only a couple of words that we need to add there.
Yeah. I remain dubious that that's actually going to help people understand this, but I'm fine with putting the change in there. I just, you know, like Greg said, it's a lot of text, and I think people are going to gloss over it. But it doesn't. I don't think it hurts us to put that in there.
Well, the other thing we can change is after example 10, it says in the example above, even though the value is expressed as a string, the type coercion rules will transform it. We could change, instead of just saying even though the value is expressed as a string, we could change that text a little bit. So it's I'm trying to think of text right now. It would be something more like
since.
Yeah.
Since the value is expressed as JSON string, the type coercion rules will transform the value into an IRI.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Could you outline each one of those areas? So example 3, text under example 10.
Yeah, so example 3, text after example 4. It's like the first paragraph after example 4.
Okay.
And then the text after example 10.
All right, I'm going to ping you offline to make sure I get each one of those. As long as there's no disagreement from the rest of the group that these are changes, that would be either benign or non-damaging. All right, this change isn't going to hurt things, and it could improve things. Does anyone disagree with that statement?
I think something is needed. I am a bit concerned about how we say that things are interpreted as IRIs, because what we really mean is that they imply that there is an object which has this identifier. And normally people say that, what do you mean an IRI? A string can be an IRI, and it's already an IRI in most of the examples that I will think of in this case. But I'm not sure if our explanation will lead them to think about the right thing.
Well, I guess humans have a hard time separating the fact that they are already doing an interpretation in their brain. But
yeah.
I don't know if we need to indicate that the machine will now interpret it, knows that it's supposed to be an IRI. The processor will understand that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that in a more colloquial way.
No, I'm just thinking that I think we are a bit in RDF mode in our minds, and people to understand it would probably be helped if they instead thought that, okay, instead of the string value, what the JSON-LD processor considers this is as a JSON object with an ID key.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump in here really quickly because we're running out of time. All of the changes that we're talking about right now are editorial. We can make them after CR.
Right.
The thing that we should be focusing on right now is if there are any substantive changes that we're afraid will need to be made after CR, that'll put us into another last call.
Right.
So it's fine. We can make all these editorial changes. We can make them now or we can make them later. But let's try to focus a bit more on whether or not we think the JSON-LD 1.0 spec is the specs are ready to go to candidate rec.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so with that said, JSON-LD 1.0, candidate rec spec, any concerns about substantive changes that we're going to need to make from now on out? If not, I'm going to do a proposal to take it to candidate rec, or propose that the RDF working group take it to candidate rec. They would be taking it to CR on August 22nd. August 22nd with a CR period of 4 weeks. Okay, so the proposal is request that the RDF working group take the JSON-LD 1.0 candidate recommendation ready specification to, well, hold on, to request that the RDF Working Group publish the JSON-LD 1.0 candidate ready specification on August 22nd with a CR period of 4 weeks. Plus one, minus one, plus zero. Vikash? All right, that's resolved. All right, they are meeting next week. Marcus, Greg, are you going to be able to be on the call next week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, should be.
Okay, all right, and we need to ping them to make sure that they put it as first thing on the agenda because we don't want it to be towards the end because it might slip off. Okay, next up is the review of the JSON-LD 1.0 API CR Ready spec. That document is here. Marcus, would you like to give us an update on the spec? Any concerns you have with it?
Well, the only question I had is whether someone had a brief look at the exit criteria. But I think that's fine. It's just, well, it's the standard text taken from some other spec. And the other question is regarding that add context, whether, you know, the feature we talked about last time, whether you can pass in a context with add context or without add context. So I changed the API algorithms to accept also a context definition, as we called that in the discussions. The only thing that isn't supported at the moment is if you pass in an array which then contains a context document, so objects with an add context key. We could support that as well, but that would mean that we would need to change the algorithms instead of just the API interface or API algorithms, or we make the API algorithms a bit more complex.
Right. If we did the former, it would just be adding one line to the context processing algorithm to check for a context key. Correct?
Yeah, we could that as well, yeah.
Yeah, that would be my recommendation.
The downside of that is that some errors might not be handled anymore that are handled now.
Like what?
Like the context processing algorithm is used internally as well. And that this change here really just affects the input from the API. And if I have a document with embedded context and in there I have an object with, again, an add context, that might not trigger an error anymore. I'm not sure. I would have to check that.
Right, it would just work.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be that concerned about it. It's ugly data, but it would still work.
You could embed a context in another context then. Right? If you just do the one line change you just said.
Right.
And I think that's a bit problematic.
Is there a major use case that we're missing by not supporting this feature? I know that it might be nice to have it, but are we concerned about some serious adoption problem because it's not in there?
To be honest, I really can't see a use case. The only use case is the one you presented last week, but even that use case is quite easily, it can be implemented quite easily if you just change that array to include the context definitions instead of the whole context document. So,
yeah.
I think, well, it's more or less just about allowing some syntactic sugar, which currently isn't allowed, but... we don't allow any other use case by introducing that.
Okay. Dave Longley, any comments on this?
I don't care all that much. My implementation allows it if you do it. I'd be fine not allowing. We don't have a use for it, for the use case. Marcus is right that if you were going off in pre-retrieving context, you could just put the definitions in the array.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's a strong use case for it. I don't feel like it's a big problem either. So I'm really okay with whatever decision we want to go with.
Okay, and in the future we could put it in there if we wanted to, or if we found that people were making that mistake.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So I think that means it's safe to not add it at this point. Any other comments about that particular feature? Okay. Anything else, Marcus, that you're concerned about that we need to take a look at?
No, the rest, I think, should be fine. I mean, there weren't any other changes that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay. I did read through the spec. I have a number of concerns about the explanation, just like a high-level explanation or the introduction for each section. Since it is the API spec, I don't think that it's super critical that we get the more colloquial explanation down, but I think we might want to leave room for making a couple of editorial passes over during CR and after CR to try and make the language a bit more accessible to folks.
Yeah, sure.
So for example, you know, the abstract says, you know, the specification defines an API and a set of algorithms for programmatic transformation of JSON-LD documents. That's great. Second sentence says, restructuring data according to the defined transformations often dramatically simplifies its usage, which doesn't really give anyone an idea of what exactly the restructuring is or why it's useful or whatnot. It's just kind of a statement of, you know, it's a statement of if you know what the spec does, that makes sense. If you don't, then that doesn't really help you. So just things like that. Okay, but I don't think we need to make any of those before CR, again, because they're editorial. Okay, anything else with the API spec before we take it to CR?
Not from my side.
Okay, so the proposal is to request that the RDF Working Group publish the JSON-LD 1.0 API spec as a CR on August 22nd with a CR period of 4 weeks. All right, there we go. All right, great. So Marcus and Greg, if you guys could propose that they resolve to move those to the CR phase, that would be good. And then the next thing we need to focus on is making sure that the test suite is complete. Let's talk about implementations very quickly. Dave Longley, I know you updated the PHP, Python, and JavaScript implementations to pass the test suite. Is that right?
That's right. And those changes were just to support partial lists and things like that, recent changes we've had.
Okay. Anyone else have their implementations up to date with the latest spec, CR-ready spec?
Mine is up to date, at least as of last week.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, mine passes the whole test suite, but that add context thing isn't implemented yet. But we don't have any tests for that, so...
and the RDF libdays and LD2 from RDF should work. It also uses compaction consistently, I think, so I don't know.
Which implementation, Nicholas?
RDF lib JSON LD. It's currently a separate package for the Python RDF lib package. I'll include it in the distribution once everything is finalized.
Great.
Okay, well, that's...
All we're missing is a C implementation. To get something in Raptor would be really, really useful,
yeah.
Necessary. And there's of course, the Java version, which has had quite a lot of recent activity. I don't know where it is with regards to passing, though.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was passed a fair chunk of the test.
I would expect it to pass most stuff. It's more or less a direct port of the JavaScript one that I wrote.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good. Okay, well, we have more than enough implementations to pass CR then so the only thing that would need to be done is the implementation report be generated. And Greg, you have all of the tooling already set up to do that, is that right?
Yeah, I've generated, I need to do updates, so I think if people could go ahead and submit their URL reports to me on that, and I could regenerate that reasonably quickly.
Great, fantastic. Okay, all right, anything else before we go?
Yeah, just a quick question. Are you giving the webmaster a heads up? Because we again have the decision on CR on Wednesday, and we try to publish it on Thursday.
Yeah, I'll send an email out to give them a heads up. I saw it's usually the RDF working group chairs that have to do that, but they might not be aware that this is coming up. I'll give them a heads up.
Marcus, do you want to send in something to make sure it's on the agenda for next week's RDF meeting?
I did I didn't get an answer, so I will ask if you got that email.
If you've already done it, I can send one.
Yeah, be sure to be pushy. Get it on the agenda first thing. All right, anything else?
Okay, so we'll go and timestamp those documents now, right?
Yes, that's right, Marcus. Yep.
Cool.
And then, pass them for pub rules and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Another great milestone. We're doing good. And hopefully in another month or so, we'll be out of CR and can go into the proposed rec phase. All right. Have a good week. Talk to you guys next week. Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.